It is a good morning, and it is a wonderful time to gather together and to worship with everyone here. Thank you so much for gathering here, and I pray that this morning is something that is beneficial to you, and that you are encouraged, but also that the name of the Lord is honored and glorified by what we do here today. I've had a song stuck in my head for the last week or so, and Lauren could probably attest to this, and I'm probably bugging her, but It's a good song. It's catchy and it has a powerful message. It is from the movie The Lion King, and it is Scar when he is planning to his coup against Mufasa with the hyenas. And Be Prepared is the name of the song. Anyway, there's a line in it that early on. The song begins with him just like roasting the hyenas, insulting them, over and over again, which is kind of funny the way it begins. But then he says this to them: "It's clear from your vacant expressions, the lights are not all on upstairs, but we're talking kings and successions. Even you can't be caught unawares." And that actually is relevant for our lesson this morning. Because in our lesson this morning, I'm not talking about the insult part, but we're going to be talking kings and successions. And if you want to read some excellent literature on kings and successions and household rivalries and battles for power over a nation and violence and bloodshed and wars and civil wars and kings having to flee for their lives and forbidden romances and adultery and all of those types of things, you should read the books of 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings in your Old Testament. Those are rather intense stories about the history of Israel, particularly as it relates to kings. And it was not always a nice, peaceful, easy history. In fact, it virtually never was. It was always dramatic, and there were constant hard feelings, and there were constant battles, and there was regular civil war. There was a division in the nations. There were battles between those. You see that all the way through. But we're going to talk about a person in particular who appears a few times during these stories, and he's someone that you may or may not have ever even heard his name before. Probably, unless you're pretty familiar with your Bible, it's not too common of a name. It is the name Mephibosheth. We're going to be talking about a guy named Mephibosheth. That's a name that you should memorize and store it away for a good Bible trivia one day. But he's an interesting character, and he's someone who David shows kindness to. David becomes king, and he wants to show kindness to someone. And he asks who it is that he can show kindness to, and he finds out about a guy named Mephibosheth. And he ends up honoring this person, and he ends up having this person sit at his own table and eat regularly with him as someone who would sit at a royal king's throne or at a royal king's table. And so we're going to study a little bit about this story and why David does that. Now, before you get to even who Mephibosheth is, it's kind of helpful to back up, and there's a reason it's significant. There was another king before David. His name was Saul. He was the first king over the United Kingdom of Israel. He was chosen, and he was loved. I mean, he was seen as someone who was head and shoulders taller than everyone else. People were very excited to have him as a king. Prior to him, the idea was that God was supposed to be king. But I think that the people actually thought, you know what? All these other nations around us, they have actually human figures as kings, and they're able to accomplish quite a bit. They don't have to, kind of like wonder and guess what the king wants. They have a king who can give direct orders. They have a king who can lead them into battle. They have a king who can build up the economy. We want a king like that. We want to be like the nations around us. And so they find this guy who looks the part. He looks like the perfect king. His name is Saul. Well, we're not going to talk too much about Saul, but I'll tell you a few things about him. He does start off seeming like a really good guy. But do you know what happens when even really good guys become kings and they are told that they're the most important people in a nation and they're given autonomy and power and rule? Very quickly, it tends to go to their heads. And very quickly, they're no longer the person they once were before they became king. And that's what you see happen with Saul. And it's kind of a tragic story, actually. But Saul ends up having the Spirit of the Lord, and then losing the Spirit of the Lord. And he ends up with an evil spirit. He ends up tormented. He ends up doing things that he has no business doing. And because of a couple of bad decisions where he disobeyed God or he tried to become his own ruler, he ends up losing his kingdom. Or at least, and this is where it gets tricky, he is told by a prophet that he's going to lose his kingdom. So he's still king, and he knows that he's going to lose his kingdom. Well, something else has happened in this time also. That same prophet, a guy named Samuel, the guy this book is named after, he goes to the house of someone named Jesse, and he ends up choosing Jesse's youngest son and anointing him to become king in place of Saul. So do you know what this means? It means there is a king with all kinds of power and authority sitting on the throne in Israel who's told your household will not continue to be king. And there's another guy, a shepherd, who ends up becoming a valiant military leader who's told you're going to be king after him. What do you think that's going to do to the mindset of the person who has becoming more and more alienated from God and who is sitting on the king thinking about his future? It's not going to be a great relationship, right? He's going to see this other person as a threat, especially when David starts having successful military victories and there are people who start, these women are singing songs like, Saul has killed his thousands, but David his tens of thousands. And it's like even the people are starting to like David more and gather around David more. Do you remember what happened when Herod, this is in the New Testament, when Jesus is born and he's told that there's going to be a king of the Jews who is born, someone who might replace him, who is a threat to his kingdom? He had all the children of Bethlehem killed because he was concerned about his own kingdom, right? What do you think is happening in Saul's mind now that there's another person anointed as king and he is told that he's going to lose his kingdom? It's not a good recipe for a peaceful relationship. As a matter of fact, it's not a peaceful relationship. Saul tries on a number of occasions to have David killed. And David, he actually has a couple of opportunities. We're gonna talk about this in a minute. A couple of opportunities to kill Saul, right? And he refuses to do it. And this is something that's going to be a key for understanding David. David will not lift his hand in violence against God's chosen king or even the family of God's chosen king. So he knows that Saul is king and he's not king yet, even though he's been anointed and told he's going to be. But he won't assassinate the king. He won't kill the king, even when the king is trying to kill him. Right? And so David is constantly in a dangerous situation. Well, during this time period where you have these two rival families, the family of Saul and the family of David, there is a friendship that is made between David and someone from Saul's family. One of Saul's sons is named Jonathan. Now, Jonathan is someone who, again, if he's selfish, if he's focusing on self-interest, he's going to be thinking, hey, you know what? If my dad remains king and then the kingdom is passed along to his son, like he actually benefits from the kingdom staying in his family. He may very well be the next king of Israel. And yet he ends up having this friendship with David where he seems to have even made peace with the fact that David is going to be the next king. Now that is really alarming to his father, and it's an unlikely friendship. It's a very unlikely loyalty and allegiance between these two people. And David is talking with Jonathan at one point, and David is concerned that the king of Israel, Saul, keeps trying to have him killed. And so he's talking to Jonathan, and he's saying, like, how am I, are you going to let me know if the king is plotting something? Because doesn't he tell you everything? And Jonathan is saying, basically, yeah, he does tell me everything. Surely he would let me know about this. And so they're kind of working on trying to get some insider information about what King Saul is planning. And I want to read a passage to you. This is in 1 Samuel chapter 20 in verse 13. This is what Jonathan says to David. He says he's going to go get with his dad, and he's going to try to find out what his dad is planning, and he's going to let David know. This is 1 Samuel chapter 20, verse 13. Jonathan says, if it please my father to do you harm, so he's talking to David, he says, if my dad wants to harm you or kill you, then may the Lord do so to Jonathan and more so if I do not make it known to you. So if my dad's wanting to harm you, then may the Lord harm me if I don't let you know about that. He's telling David, I'm going to try to keep you informed on the plans of my Father, and to send you away that you may go in safety. And may the Lord be with you as he has been with my Father. If I am still alive, will you not show me the loving kindness of the Lord that I may not die? All right, so keep that in your mind also. He asks for David, who's going to be king, to show him the loving kindness of the Lord. The loving kindness, it's a really important Hebrew word there. It's one that we've talked about before. It's the word chesed, and it's a word that is repeatedly used to talk about the goodness, the kindness, the steadfast love of God. All right? It's used a bunch in God's own descriptions of himself. It's used a lot throughout the Psalms. It is a word that is regularly used to describe the loving, loyal kindness and steadfast love of God. And what Jonathan is saying, basically, David, when you become king, it is very common when someone becomes king, especially if they're taking over like from another family or a rival king, to have that entire other king's family wiped out. It's like you don't want there to be questions about legitimacy of your kingship from this point forward. So when you become king, you kill the other king, you kill all of his children, you kill his entire household, and that way you can get all of that done. There's no controversy. You are solely the one legitimate king and you become king. And what Jonathan is saying to David is, please show me and my family steadfast love. Show us loving kindness when you come to this power. What other kings in this time period would do is they'd wipe out their enemies. He's asking David, even though I'm part of this other family, even though some might even consider me to be the rightful heir to the throne, please show loving kindness. And then he says, this is in verse 15, you shall not cut off your loving kindness from my house forever, not even when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. So even if the Lord takes care of all of your enemies for you, please show loving kindness to me and my household. That's what Jonathan is asking. And David and Jonathan make a covenant with each other way back here. Okay, well, the story continues from that point forward. Saul is out trying to kill David, and he's leading with this large group of people trying to find David and have him killed. And at one point, he goes to rest in a cave along their journeys. And do you know who is hiding in that cave already from Saul? David was. And he sees Saul enter in, and he sees Saul in there. And David sneaks up on Saul, and he pulls out his knife, and he merely cuts off the fringe of his clothing, and then he doesn't harm him at all. And then he lets Saul know, hey, while you were in here, I was in here with you. He holds up some of his clothes, and he lets Saul know, I could have killed you, but I showed kindness to you. And Saul is blown away by this. He's very thankful. He even says to David, this is 1 Samuel chapter 24 and verse 20. This is how Saul responds to that. He says, now behold, I know that you will surely be king. So Saul even admits to David, okay, you're the one who's going to be king, and the kingdom of Israel will be established in your hand. So now swear to me by the Lord that you will not cut off my descendants after me, and that you will not destroy my name from my father's household. Again, he's saying, okay, David, I get it. You were chosen to be king. You're even a better man than I am. I would have killed you. You showed kindness to me. When you do become king, please show kindness to my family again. Don't cut us off forever. Don't destroy my father's household's name. Let our family at least continue on. There's a real fear, because again, that would be the common practice, that as soon as David becomes king, he'll wipe out everyone from Saul's family so that there's no question about the legitimacy of his reign. And Saul is begging him, please don't do that. Verse 22 says, David swore to Saul, and Saul went to his home, but David and his men went up to the stronghold. Now, you might think, okay, maybe after this point, there's going to be peace between David and Saul. No, Saul eventually tries to kill him again. It happens again in just a couple of chapters. So Saul really wants David wiped out. He's really concerned about his own throne. He's really concerned about his own family. Well, again, you keep reading through as a brief summary, but eventually Saul and Jonathan are killed in a battle, and they both die. And Saul's household is attacked, not many people escape. They have to flee. And after that, David is then made king. And he is made king over a smaller area in Israel. He's made king over Judah. And then there's another son of Saul, though, a guy named Ishbosheth, who they make king. So now we have two different kings in Israel, David, who's supposed to be king, and another one from the family of Saul, who's continuing on. All right, so Saul's family is not supposed to have the kingdom anymore, and yet they're continuing on with this guy named Ishbosheth. Well, this leads to a civil war. David still doesn't want to harm the family of Saul, but some of Ishbosheth's own people assassinate him, and he ends up being killed. The right-hand man of Saul, a guy named Abner, he ends up being killed by one of David's generals. And so, like, one after another, Saul has died, Jonathan has died, Ishbosheth has died, the leaders of Saul's family have died. And David, when you get to 2 Samuel chapter 5, becomes king over all Israel. So now he is the one king ruling everything, and Saul's family is no longer in charge. And you think about that, and you remember those covenants that David made to Jonathan and to Saul. Even though Saul like broke his end of the deal, David still promised that he would show loving kindness to Saul's family and to Jonathan's family after them. Well, David hasn't killed anybody in Saul's family. David is trying hard. David actually avenged the death of Saul and Jonathan and Ishbosheth. Like, David is constantly against attacking their family. And yet one thing leads to another, and they either keep dying in battle or through assassination or through other people who come along and do it. And so David is now king, and he has had a military victory. He's about to have some peace in his kingdom. And he asks a question, and this is where we get to our chapter, which is 2 Samuel chapter 9. 2 Samuel chapter 9 and verse 1. Notice what David says. Then David said, "Is there yet anyone left in the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?" So David remembers his friendship with Jonathan. He remembers the oath and the covenant that he made with Saul's family. And he's wondering, like, is there anyone even left in their family that I can show kindness to? I know their family's tried to kill me over and over again. I know that if there is anyone left from Saul's family, some people might think that they, you know, are the legitimate heirs to the throne. He knows that the existence of this family is bad for him. And yet he remembers the covenant that he made and the oath that he made. And he asks, is there anyone still around? And then it says in verse 2, "Now there was a servant from the house of Saul whose name was Ziba." So they don't know. Like, none of David's people even know if anyone is left in Saul's family. And so they call someone who used to be a servant from Saul's family, a guy named Ziba. And he comes and they say, "Ziba, do you know of anyone who is still alive from Saul's family?" And he does. He knows about Mephibosheth, the guy that we were talking about earlier. He knows where he is, and he knows where he has been. So what probably happened is after the fall of Saul's household, anyone who could escape did, and they are hiding. They're trying to remain silent. They don't want anyone to know that they're still around. And Mephibosheth is one of the only ones, and he's hiding, and Ziba knows where he is. And Ziba gets called by the king to tell him where Mephibosheth is. And then after he does tell them, David sends men out to Mephibosheth. You can imagine Mephibosheth being there and seeing David's men coming towards him, having found out where he was, probably a lot of fear and anxiety. You don't know what's going to happen to you. What ordinarily would happen is you would be killed right here. But Mephibosheth ends up being taken to King Saul. Now, there's something you should know about Mephibosheth at this point, and it's something that Ziba actually tells him. At the end of verse 3, Ziba tells the king, "There is still a son of Jonathan who is crippled in both feet." That language of being crippled in both feet, we actually heard about that earlier in 2 Samuel. So when Saul's family was being attacked, when Mephibosheth was about 5 years old, there was a nurse who picked him up and she was running for her life and she fell and dropped him and he was injured, and he's been injured since that time, and he is crippled in both feet. And so he can't walk around, he is disabled. Right. And so they're able to get this man, and they bring him to David, and now he's about to find out what his fate is going to be. Is David going to do what a normal king would do and protect his own throne and have Mephibosheth killed to put an end to the household of Saul, or is he going to remember the loving kindness that he promised to Jonathan and to Saul? Is he going to honor this person? Well, you keep reading, and verse 6 says, It says, Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and prostrated himself. And David said, Mephibosheth. And he said, here is your servant. So Mephibosheth is, I think, very afraid. He falls down before David. He says, I'm your servant. He is wanting David to show kindness. And here's what David says in verse 7. Do not fear. I will surely show kindness to you for the sake of your father Jonathan. So what David says is, I know you're terrified right now. I know that what ordinarily would happen is you'd be executed right now. But don't fear. I made a promise to your father, who I loved very much, and even to your grandfather, that I would show kindness to their household, and you are the only one left. And so, David says, I will show kindness to you for the sake of your father, Jonathan, and here's what he promises to do. I will restore to you all the land of your grandfather, Saul, and you shall eat at my table regularly. Do not fear. I will show kindness. I'm actually going to give you, you don't have to stay in hiding anymore. I'm going to give you all of the land that your father, your grandfather Saul had, and you are welcome at my table anytime. You keep reading in verse 8. This is Mephibosheth's response. He says, again, he prostrated himself and he said, what is your servant that you should regard a dead dog like me? He's like, I'm nothing. I have no power. I can't even walk. Are showing me this kind of favor? What do you care about a dead dog like me? And David says in verse 9, all that belonged to Saul and to his house I have given to your master's grandson. He says that to Ziba. You and your sons shall cultivate the land for him, and you shall bring in the produce from your master's grandson that he may have food. Nevertheless, Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall eat at my table regularly. At the end of verse 11, it says, so Mephibosheth ate at the king's table as one of the king's sons. And then verse 13, so Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, and he ate at the king's table regularly, and he was lame in both feet. All right, so what do we learn from this story? It's actually not the end of the story of Mephibosheth. Ziba eventually does use the fact that someone from the family of Saul is continuing on against David in chapter 16, and there is a little bit more conflict that comes up because David didn't do the wise thing and have him killed. He did the kind thing and he blessed him. But what you see right here is that David is showing kindness to someone that no one else would show kindness to. And I think he does it for a couple of reasons. And I think these are some reasons that maybe we should keep with us as we consider how we ought to live in a world around us. David keeps his word. And I think that is something that is extraordinarily valuable and is sometimes rare to have a radical integrity that even though that was a promise he made years ago to someone who's not even alive anymore, and even though Saul's family has tried to kill him since making that promise, David decided he was going to keep his word to his friend Jonathan and his word to the king of Israel. And even though it had been years and he didn't even know if there was someone from that, he could have so easily just like forgotten about that or just ignored what he had said or moved on with his life and just let, you know, he didn't just don't send people after Mephibosheth or don't even try to track him down. Just let him live his life, I'll live my life. That's not what David was going to do. He intentionally remembered that and decided that he was going to act upon the promise that he made to make sure Mephibosheth was blessed and cared for. And that's what he did. He brought him into the king's house. This is someone who he was going to love, even though it would be disadvantageous to him. He's going to love someone from an enemy household. It's like there's this power, there's two families in Israel vying for the power of the throne, and David is going to show kindness to someone. Mephibosheth had done nothing good to David, all right? He's showing kindness to him out of loyalty and out of love. This is also someone who, keep in mind, is disabled and who in that culture would very easily be overlooked. I mean, in our culture too, he's someone who you could often just ignore, overlook, think it's easier just to let him be over there and me focus on my life. But again, David doesn't do that. David welcomed him to his table and to his palace. There are a lot of things in what David is doing that remind me of Jesus himself. The fact that he advocates for a radical integrity in keeping his word. The fact that he shows kindness to the people who are often overlooked. And the fact that he loves someone who the world would tell him is supposed to be his enemy. Remember, Jesus is the one who said to love your enemies. David is showing that kind of radical love to Mephibosheth. He's showing that kind of love to someone who should be his enemy. He's inviting him to his table. That reminds me of Jesus when he goes to have dinner with the Pharisee, and he looks around and he sees all these people who are like trying to take the nicest seat at the table, and people care so much about their social status. And Jesus says, when you throw a reception or a banquet, don't just invite the people who are rich and wealthy and who can repay you. He says, instead, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, since there is no way that they can repay you, for you will be repaid in the resurrection of the righteous. What David is saying, or what David is doing, is he's blessing someone who in no way has the power to repay him. He's blessing someone who can't do anything back for him. It's a complete act of kindness and grace towards someone who should be an enemy, towards someone who is often overlooked, for the sake of a promise that he made to someone who's not even alive anymore. And I think that type of attitude that says, I'm going to keep my word, I'm going to show the goodness and the kindness of God to people, even if that person is my enemy, even if that person can't repay me, I'm going to do it because that's who God is. The language that Saul or that Jonathan used was, show me the loving kindness of the Lord to my family. And the language that David used in 2 Samuel chapter 9, he said that he wanted to show kindness to him, but notice the language that he uses is that he wants to show him the kindness of God. This is in verse 3. He says, is there not yet anyone in the house of Saul to whom I may show the kindness of God? I think what we're getting here is a picture of what the kindness of God looks like. The kindness of God keeps his word. The kindness of God is demonstrated towards those who cannot repay him. And the kindness of God is demonstrated even those towards those who would be his enemies. If you remember some of the language of the New Testament that talks about the cross itself, it says, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He died for even those who rejected him. He died for those who were unworthy. He died for those who would be at enmity with him. And that's the type of love that Jesus calls for us to have. That's the type of love that David is showing. So as we bring our lesson to a close, here's the challenge. Look for an opportunity to show kindness to someone, particularly someone who cannot repay it. David showed kindness, and it was a picture of the kindness of God. It's a foretaste of the ministry of Jesus and the type of love that he tells us to have for one another. And I would encourage each of us to try to show that in our lives, because that's the type of love and the type of kindness that God has shown to us. And in fact, it's because God has shown us that love and kindness that every one of us here today can be forgiven, can have hope, can have eternal life. And if we can help you take advantage of that, please let it be known. Name Jesus as the Lord of your life. Commit your life to him through repentance and baptism, and live for him from this day forward. If you want to talk to one of our elders in the library in the back, you can do that, or you can come and sit on the front row while we stand and as we sing.